You're listening to a High Voltage Radio Network podcast. Find more at highvoltageradio.com.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Nate Milton.
Yes! That boy's good!
And Marcus Vandenberg.
Westside!
So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings.
Down with the King for years, about 10 of them. Recruiting suckers, Mac and Mike and making men of them.
And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic program produced and hosted by two or more African-Americans who are not affiliated with a major network. I'm your host, the Godfather Nate Milton. We got a big show for you guys and girls this week. We're going to talk some NBA. We're going to talk some XFL. We might even get into the ponies on this week's show. But I can't do it alone, so let me bring in my tag team partner, the man that has the perspective of not only a longtime veteran journalist, but also a degenerate gambler. So I'm sure he can tell me what went down this past weekend at the Kentucky Derby. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Southern California, the regional director of the light-skinned delegation, Marcus Vandenberg. How you doing, brother?
What's up, Nate? How you doing?
I'm doing good, my friend. Ready to talk about all of the action, the stories that we got to talk about this week. But for the people watching on Patreon, they can certainly see we got three people in the shot this week. So it's not just Marcus. It's not just myself. But we got somebody that looks kind of familiar, but not really. Like, he kind of looks like Professor Chris from L.A., but a little less dangerous, a little less gangster, if you will. This is the new clean-shaven Chris from L.A. What's up, brother?
What's up? Yeah, that beard is not coming back for at least another month. It was just the upkeep, man.
Yeah, I was telling Marcus before we went on, I was like, yo, well, this is the first time we talked to clean-shaven Chris, looking like a MSNBC political pundit up here.
Yeah. My girlfriend misses the beard, but yeah, it's just right now I just can't deal with that.
Yes, well, Chris, of course, is coming to us from the podcast Wild Card Shakeup, so it's good to have you, brother.
Good to be here.
But, Marcus, we have a couple things we want to get into this week. I think in the A block, we'll just talk a little NBA real quick, since Chris is here, certainly somebody that follows the hardwood. But we're also going to talk about the Kentucky Derby from this past weekend and some of the shenanigans that went down. So you want to start with the hoops or the horses?
The hoops.
All right, so, yeah, I guess let's start out in the West Coast, because that's where you guys are. But last night we saw the Houston Rockets even up the series with the defending national champion Golden State Warriors, world champion, I guess you could say, even though they don't play nobody in Yugoslavia. What have you made of this series so far? We'll start with you, Chris, because I think even though, you know, it's good that the Warriors are getting a bit of a test, ultimately, it's not going to mean anything because I can't see the Rockets pulling this series out.
Yeah, that's my thing, too. I just don't see it happen. And I kind of even thought before going into last night's game that the Rockets would even up the series because the way the Warriors play, it's like they do take nights off, you know, and it seems like they can turn it on at any time. I think it goes two more games. I think you know that, and that's just me. I think, you know, if lucky, you know, that the Rockets might be able to drag it out to seven, but I think ultimately in the end, the Warriors are gonna take this one. But the game last night was really good, though. I did enjoy that game.
What about you, Marcus? Because I think we might have seen the best of the Rockets, but we've also seen kind of the worst of the Warriors, in particular Steph, these last two games.
I like the Rockets in this series.
Really?
I think you gotta remember this series went 7 games last year, and really it came down to some pretty bad shooting in that game 7, which was pretty unusual for the Rockets to miss, I think, 26 straight three-pointers in a row. So I think people gotta remember that this was a tight series last year. This Warriors team is not as good as it was last year. They haven't been playing as great. I think the Rockets now have some confidence after 2 games at home. So it would not surprise me if the Rockets showed up in Game 5 and stole a game in Golden State. And then if the Warriors are down 3-2, we've seen that before for Golden State, but I'd be really curious to see how they respond being in the hole like that.
I like the way you're thinking, Marcus. I don't think it's going to happen, but I would hope. I hope that your prediction comes true just because I'm petty. And I want to drink in the tears of sad Bay Area fans. But I'm still going to stick with Golden State. Chris said in 6. You're saying what? Rockets in 7?
I'm going Rockets in 6.
Rockets,
I feel like I think if they have to win at home. I don't see them winning game 7 in Golden State. So I think the only way they do it is if they steal game 5 and then finish in Houston.
Okay, so we got Chris going Warriors in 6, Marcus going Rockets in 6. I'm going to go Warriors in 7. I still think, even though the Warriors aren't what they were last year, I think they're still the best team remaining in the playoffs. And if they go out, I don't see them going out here. So I'm going to go with the Warriors in 7. On the other side of the bracket, Marcus, you got Portland and Denver, much like the other series, tied up at 2 right now. I don't remember what we picked from last week, because last week seems like 2 weeks ago.
Did we make picks? I don't know if we did.
I thought we did. We might have. It was right after end game. So Chris knows, man. My whole mindset was in a different place after watching that movie. I'm going with Denver in this series. Who you got, Marcus?
I'm going with Denver as well. I think they're the deeper team, better team. And I think Jokic has turned out to be the best player in the series. And I think that will continue and sort of lead Denver to the conference finals.
Yeah. What about you, Chris?
I like Denver. I don't like them by a lot, but I do like them better, if that makes sense. I think they're just because of the depth, if nothing else, I have to go with Denver.
Okay. And Marcus, I don't know what it is. Again, maybe I'm stereotyping here, but I can take Chris's NBA analysis a lot more seriously now with the beard gone.
I thought you were going to say with the Lakers gone.
Speaking of the Lakers, man, what did you make of your boy LeBron on the barbershop the other night, Chris?
Talking about
Magic.
Oh, I missed that episode of the barbershop, but I heard about it. Look, I am gonna root for LeBron until I'm given a reason not to root for LeBron. That whole situation was kind of just, for lack of a better term, janky. I don't think Magic handled it in the most professional way. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, maybe everything happened the way it should have happened. And, you know, I think LeBron, you know, look, this he's not in the Eastern Conference anymore. And this Lakers team, it's, for all intents and purposes, it's a scrub team. It's not a good team. He got injured for a good chunk of the season as well. So, I'm still going to ride with LeBron. This is, you know, different than, you know, my past, feelings on LeBron, but you know, this is not an ideal situation for him.
And I mean, Marcus and I can relate to LeBron and what he was saying in the barbershop, because you know we used to have somebody that we worked with that just disappeared without saying anything as well. So I mean, I feel you, LeBron, in that moment.
When you think, I mean, pretty much the same thing. Both people were too afraid to just say to the world, I'm leaving the show. I'm leaving the team. Yeah. So, yeah, there's some parallels there.
And both like to wear nice fancy suits. So
yep.
Who knows? That's all I'm going to say, because I want to put Chris in a situation.
I still talk to that person.
Chris, like, I might have to see this dude in the street tomorrow. let's go to the East real quick. We got Philly and Toronto tied at 2, and then Milwaukee with a, dare I say, insurmountable 3-1 lead over Kyrie and the Celtics. Marcus, first of all, Milwaukee beat Boston. Anyway, Boston comes back. And second of all, who you got in Philly and Toronto?
For Milwaukee, Boston, 1-2-3 Cancun. That series is over. Raptors, Sixers has been an emotional roller coaster for someone who is invested in the Raptors for God knows reason. God knows why. That game 4 was very important for Toronto. I think game 5 tonight is very, very important for Toronto because this team, I don't think, has the moxie to go down 3-2 and win in Philly. So yeah. I think the winner of tonight's game will win the series. And since Embiid has looked not great and sick in Toronto's home, I'm going to go with the Raptors.
Yeah, that, to me, that's what it all comes down to in that series is Joel Embiid. If he is right, then I think the Sixers are by far, even though the Raptors have the best player, I think the Sixers have the best team if Embiid is right. Mm-hmm. But if he's not right, then it becomes a crapshoot. And so I am much more willing to bet, and I think it'd be different, Marcus, if they had time for him to kind of rest. But in a seven-game series, in a playoff series, you don't have time to rest. You know what I mean? You have to get ready, and you might have a day or two in between, but that's about it. You don't have time to get right. So I'm going to go with Toronto winning a very tough series. And then, like you said, on the other side of the ledger with Milwaukee and Boston, I think Kyrie is not only thinking about Cancun. He's also thinking about the Garden because, you know, the rumors. So, yeah, I think this is this to me, Chris, sets up for a very interesting Eastern Conference Finals with Toronto and Milwaukee. It's like a – I mean, Toronto's been in the finals the last – or been in a position, either the semis or the finals the last few years.
No.
But they've always had to get to LeBron.
Never been to a conference final.
Yeah, that's the thing. LeBron has been their kryptonite, and I'm rooting for the Raptors this year. I'm actually rooting for them to win the whole thing.
That's just because you want to see your man Kawhi come to L.A. at this
I would like to see something like that happen, but you know, just because the Raptors have been, like, every year they've been a good team, it's not they if it wasn't for LeBron, they would have made it to the finals, you know. And that's like one of the things about LeBron is, you know, as far as the Eastern Conference, you know, force, that's what he was. That conference belonged to him. So any other team that was trying to make any kind of headway in that conference, the minute you ran into LeBron, you were in trouble. This is the one year where they this is their best year to make it, you know, deep into the playoffs or even to the finals, and I hope they do. So for that reason, I am rooting for I think they're a better team than Philly. I honestly do. So for that reason, I'm rooting for the Raptors.
Okay. Yeah, and so I think that out of all the teams left, Marcus, and this might seem weird just in the fact that it's probably the least star-studded team out of the four remaining teams in the East. But honestly, I think Milwaukee might be the team that gives Golden State the best potential matchup in a final series, just from a defensive standpoint.
Yeah.
I don't know if they have the offense. They probably don't. But just in terms of stopping what Golden State can do, I think Milwaukee might be the best equipped to do that.
Mm-hmm. It would be an interesting series. I think the lack of experience would definitely hurt Milwaukee in that sense. But and I think Toronto would be interesting too, because I mean Kawhi in the series against the Sixers has been not Kobe-esque. He's been Jordan-esque in terms of just efficiency and dominating on both sides of the ball. He's averaging 38 points on 61% shooting from the field, which is ridiculous. I think for the playoffs as a whole, he's shooting 59% from the field. I mean, that's numbers from your big man, not from your small forward. So, and I think Siakam could give Durant some headaches there defensively. So, but that's still such a long way from now.
Yeah, but I mean, I hear what you're saying though, because effectively, listeners, what Marcus is talking about is when Kawhi Leonard is on the court for the Toronto Raptors, he gives them maximum security. And that, Christopher Marquise Ely, is what they call it in the business, the professional segue. Because we're going to talk about these horses real quick. Did either one of you guys watch the Kentucky Derby? Because I got tricked into watching the Kentucky Derby.
What do you mean you got tricked?
Okay, because I have family members that are interested, and I'm not going to put nobody's name out there for tax purposes. But, you know, some people in my family know that, you know, I am a broadcaster. I'm somebody that pays attention to these sports things. And so sometimes I get called for advice for recreational purposes. I believe that's what they say, Marcus Vandenberg.
Mm-hmm. So what'd your daddy do?
You know, sometimes if the national championship is on, I might get a call from somebody I ain't talked to since Christmas. Hey, what do you think about this particular game? I'm not saying what happens after that. I'm just saying I give my advice to the best of my ability. So I was asked about this particular race. And I don't know nothing about no horse races. So I just watched. I know Woody Page talks about horse races a lot. So I went on Woody Page's Twitter to check what he said, and I just, you know, kind of formulated my own opinion based off of Woody Page. So I'm flipping through the channels on Sunday evening, and this is how I got tricked into watching it. Because I don't care about horse racing. I don't even care about the Kentucky Derby. To me, the Kentucky Derby, and let's see if you agree with this, Chris. To me, the Kentucky Derby is white people freaknik. It's rich white people freaknik.
like as a kid, I went to a few of the horse races at Hollywood Park in Inglewood, California. I never had a good time at that stuff. My uncle was always betting on horses. That's probably why him and my aunt got a divorce.
Wow. That's getting really just
deep.
I've never been into that stuff, man. The furthest I've been into it is I like the movie Seabiscuit.
Because it stars Spider-Man.
It was a decent movie, yeah.
But so Marcus, I get the appeal of the Kentucky Derby. It just doesn't appeal to me specifically.
Have you been to a horse race, Nate?
I want to say, was it Santa Anita out there?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've been there too.
When I used to live in San Diego, it was a long time ago. Like somebody on the Navy base was taking a group out to Santa Anita, and I happened to tag along. And like I said, it's cool if that's what you're into, but I just wasn't into it. Like I can see the appeal of being at the track. I got better things to do with my time. So I'm flipping through the channels, Marcus, and I believe it was Mike Tirico. Famed Italian television broadcaster Mike Tirico.
Not black Mike Tirico.
Not black Mike Tirico. And he was talking about one of the owners on the horses and all the stuff they had to go through and the jockey. And, you know, Mike Tirico is one of the best storytellers in broadcasting. And, you know, he sucked me into the show, Marcus. He's like, and here's the story of the jockey, Guadalupe Valdez. That ain't even a man's name, but it was some type of Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying. He's like, Guadalupe Valdez came to this country. He couldn't speak a word of English, and all he knew was he wanted to ride horses. And it's taken him 35 years from when he was a small boy to get to this point. And I'm just sitting there like, you know what? In 5 minutes, you told me a better story than WWE has this entire year. Because now I'm invested in seeing if Guadalupe can win the race. Like the race, the race gonna take about 2-3 minutes. I can leave it on TV for a minute, so I leave it on there. Right. See the race, Maximum Security win the race, but then there's a challenge. I didn't even know you could challenge a horse racer, Marcus.
Yep.
And it was what they say, it's the fastest 2 minutes in sports. That's the tagline.
Mm-hmm.
This challenge took like 15-20 minutes for them to come down.
21 minutes, yeah, after that.
Yeah, come down with an official ruling. And finally, it turned out that a country house, was like a 64-1 long shot, ended up winning, even though he wasn't a horse that got impeded with. And I'm just like, this is amazing, like the drama. And the people at the – this might have been the most rowdy, the people at the Kentucky Derby were, because they were booing my man Country Horse when Country Horse is on and picked up the check.
All that money they lost, I'd be booing too. He was a favorite.
Yeah.
Did you watch any of the race, Chris?
I didn't watch any of it, man. I saw like the highlights and stuff on the news, but that is pretty much it. I wasn't wasn't invested in that. The last time I was into one of those horse races, I wasn't really into it, but it was just my friends and stuff were talking about it. Was Pine Alley? I think that was in 2005. Yeah, that's the last time. So,
you know, the last time I watched a race before this, Marcus, and it ties in what we were just talking about,
mm-hmm.
was when our boy Kevin Krieger was on the horse.
Right. Right, that was the Derby, right?
Yeah, Kevin Krieger was in the Derby like 5 years ago, 4 years ago.
That was the first year of the show.
Yeah, because we had Kevin Krieger come on, and he told us he was going to win the Kentucky Derby.
And it came out the best catchphrase of the show.
Yes.
Krieger, yeah, please.
Krieger, please.
He did not win the Derby.
Oh, Kevin Krieger. Shout out to Kevin Krieger. I don't even know if he's still racing.
Where are they now, Kevin Krieger?
Yeah, he's now racing for Wakanda.
Oh, 2017, he was mulling a comeback.
Oh,
he walked away in 2014 from racing.
Oh wow! So after our show, he was like, you know what? These niggas are so disrespectful.
I'm going back to Trinidad.
Yeah, so shout out to Kevin Krieger if he ever comes back to the horse racing game. But yeah, it was crazy, Marcus, because I don't know, like, if you obviously you didn't watch the race, but I'm sure you saw like the outcry from it, man. What did you make of the whole situation?
Side note, he did come back 2018.
Okay.
He raced last year, so just like a whole video from the Sacramento Bee. They did a whole video feature on him getting back to horse racing. So look at that. Look at our man, Kevin Krieger. All right. What was your question?
Why does it look like Chris's phone, like he's actually running a race?
Yeah, I don't know. Am I still on the picture with you guys?
No, it's like a wall, like stripes. And
yeah, but it looks like he's running. Okay.
Yeah.
I think I know what the... Okay, yeah, I think I've reversed the camera by accident.
Oh. Let me
fix this. Making me dizzy.
Yeah, sorry about that.
What did you think about it, Marcus? Because I thought it was fun to see kind of, like, I don't want to say real sports, but like stuff that you see in the NFL or you know, Major League Baseball, like with these challenges, see that implemented into the world of horse racing.
Yeah, I mean, controversy is good for ratings, and I think the ratings...
Eric Bischoff, controversy creates cash.
Yeah, the ratings reflected that. There is some buzz, and people tuned over who might have not watched the race. The problem is Maximum Security, it's not running the Preakness.
Yeah.
Country Home, is that it?
House. Country House.
Also out of the Preakness. So you have your two babyface heels in this race.
It's terrible booking by the horse racing community.
terrible. So they're both not in the race. I mean, the Preakness, who cares? Because you have your there's no Triple Crown, and then there's no disputed Triple Crown because Maxim Security's not in it. So at this point, it's going to be a snooze.
And really, what they should have done was they should have kept Maximum Security as the winner, slid Country House some money under the table, been like, hey, we going to tell everybody Maximum Security won, but we going to break y'all off with a little bit of paper. Mm-hmm. Y'all wait. We going to have him run in the Preakness. And then what's the third leg? The Belmont?
Belmont's the last one, yes.
Yeah. And then like we'll have Maximum Security win the Belmont, and then Country House comes back. And we're going to have Max Security win the Preakness, and then Country House comes out for the Belmont and wins that one. That's how you book that story, Marcus.
Hmm.
That's why Vince McMahon needs to take over horse races too, like he's about to take over football. we'll talk about that in a second, like literally a second. The people watching on the Patreon feed, like it's going to be maybe 20 seconds, 30 seconds. That we stopped talking, but then the people listen to the classic audio. We're going to take a break, be back on the other side, because we're talking some WWE, we're talking some XFL, and we're talking somebody whose pockets might be deeper than Vince McMahon's, Marcus Vandenberg.
Oh, yes.
He's back.
The return of crumbs.
The return of crumbs. So don't go anywhere, stick and stay. We got more Kings of Sport right after this.
Don't even gotta try.
You know.
I like shot and make it better over time.
You know.
They just say I'm not the baddest bitch you like.
Ain't my fault that I'm out here getting loose. Gotta blame it on the goose. Gotta blame it on my juice, baby. Ain't my fault that I'm out here making news. I'm the pudding in the proof. Gotta blame it on my juice. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Don't even gotta try.
Now you know.
I like shot and make it better over time.
Now you know.
Heard you say I'm not the baddest bitch you like.
Ain't my fault that I'm out here getting loose. Gotta blame it on the goose. Gotta blame it on my juice, baby. Ain't my fault that I'm out here making news. I'm the pudding in the proof. Gotta blame it on my juice. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Welcome back to the world's most dangerous sports show. Follow the danger online at facebook.com/thekingsofsport.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
We are back on the Kings of Sport, ready to close up the shop for yet another week. But before we do, we got to give you what you want. We got to give you what you need, and what you want and need is ratchetness in its full effect. We got to give you that full dose, straight, no chaser. And that's what this segment is all about. It is our repository of ratchetness, our cornucopia of crazy, where we take the wildest stories from the world of sports, pop culture, entertainment, politics, pro wrestling, and we give it to you. And that's what this is all about. And so, it is, I think we got a good place to start this week, because this is something that ties into sports and wrestling. And of course, it is the rebirth, Marcus, of the XFL. I don't know why Chris is not wearing his San Francisco Demon shirt today? Did you not get the memo, brother?
Who was our team? Was it the L.A.
Extreme?
Extreme or Express?
Yeah, yeah.
Extreme.
Something like that, yeah.
Tommy Maddox.
L.A. Extreme, Tommy Maddox.
Tommy Maddox, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, the XFL is back for 2020, and Marcus Vandenberg, I know you might not take this league seriously, but there are some people with some pretty big names, or at least some pretty big initials, that take this thing seriously, namely Fox and ESPN and your people, Marcus Vandenberg. Your people, the mouse.
Yes, well, first off, put some respect on the one-time champion, LA Extreme, all right? We are defending a title this year. They just hired a coach today for the LA team, Winston Moss, former Packers coordinator who was in the Rodgers mess. So Disney, which is ABC, ESPN, and Fox, are teaming up to carry the XFL in 2020. And this is already sounding like a better TV deal than the first go-round, which was, I believe,
NBC.
NBC and
UPN.
UPN.
Spike and, TV also.
Yeah, that's right. So
yeah.
I think having ESPN and Fox brings a little bit of legitimacy to this league. I think it's interesting that this league will – I think the finals is after the NFL draft, I want to say. They are also running a show – carrying a game, excuse me, on Fox Sports 1, the night of WrestleMania, which will be interesting to see how that plays out. But they are covered for the entire season and the title game with at least, I think, two games a week on high-profile networks that people can find.
Yeah, and I think we all expected the Fox component because of the SmackDown deal. Like, I mean, they can say it was for the wrestling, you know, the price they paid for SmackDown, but you ain't paying that much damn money for SmackDown. I think we assumed there was some kind of maybe handshake agreement that we'll at least take a look at the XFL as your broadcast partner. But the ESPN one is the one that surprised me, Marcus. Because ESPN, not that Fox doesn't give them credibility, but Fox to me seemed more like a business deal. ESPN, on the other hand, like ESPN didn't have to do this. Like that gives them credibility from the standpoint of a company, maybe not so much the actual on-the-field product, but at least from like a fan standpoint, if you're on ESPN, like, okay, maybe I should pay more attention to you now.
Mm-hmm.
So I think go ahead.
I was going to say the title game is April 26th. It's the day after the NFL draft next year, which is in Las Vegas, which leads to the question, would it be wise to just have your title game in Las Vegas, considering you're going to have all these NFL fans already in town for 3 days, is that your best shot is to just sort of go all in on that weekend?
Yeah, they should totally take the tack that, you know, the inverse of WrestleMania week, where during WrestleMania week, you got the big entity of the WWE and these other entities kind of feeding off of the overrun of people in town. And here you got the NFL draft, which is this big entity. If you're the WWE, if you're the XFL, you'd be smart, in my opinion, Marcus, and that's a great idea, to kind of play the role of an AEW or an ROH or an Impact and feed off of the crowd that's going to be in town for that NFL.
Mm-hmm.
So what did you make of this, Chris, when you heard the news? I know you are somebody who has been waiting for years for the return of the XFL. I know you still got your He Hate Me jersey in the closet. What did you make of this news, man?
I didn't make anything of it. Here's the thing. when they got the deal back in, when was it, 2000 or whatever, they were on NBC. NBC was the number one network on television at that time. They had a lot of viewership. That's when they used to have the must-see TV lineups and all that crap. So I never thought that that visibility was an issue. They were also on UPN, but XFL isn't the NFL. Like when Fox acquired the NFL, it was an instant game changer because Fox was a fringe network, and the NFL turned Fox into one of the major networks. I don't know what the goal is for the XFL. They haven't said how they're going to be different on that stupid press conference on the Alpha YouTube network, which is still the only video they have up on that channel. Vince McMahon said, he was asked about the anthem and this and that, and he said, yeah, we're going to make players stand for the anthem or whatever. It's like, what are you doing differently? The NFL, for all its faults, the NFL is still quality television. The games are compelling. It's an institution. That's why people watch the NFL. Like, is the XFL going into the first Redux season knowing that they are never going to compete with the NFL? Are they eventually wanting to compete with the NFL? I just don't know the end game for this. I don't see them lasting long. I don't know who's going to want to sponsor this. On ESPN, there's a lot of bullshit that comes on ESPN during the weekend. It's like they show like bowling and stupid stuff on the weekend sometimes, especially when football season isn't in. They'll show like people playing dominoes and shit. I don't know what's good about this. It's good you got your TV deals and stuff, but at the end of the day, you need eyes to the product. Are you going to have that? Is my question.
Well, first of all, I want to apologize to all the bowlers that listen to the show.
I know. So rude.
I don't know. Chris is being real disrespectful to Pete Weber Jr. and them boys out there. Y'all are real athletes. But Marcus, I think Chris brings up a good point inside of the shade, which is, I think it's great that they've acquired this deal, because going into it, I thought the one advantage that the AF had over the XFL, besides not having the tarnish of the original XFL attached to it, was that they had a TV deal with CBS. But this deal blows that deal out of the water. So I think from an accessibility standpoint, it's great. The question remains, though, is there still an appetite for off-season football, which I don't know if there is.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back to the original XFL run, that first game did 14 million people, 14 mm-hmm. million viewers on NBC. That's not going to happen with the relaunch in 2020. But I don't think we'll see a drastic drop off like we saw the first time in 2001, where the ratings just absolutely tanked.
Right.
I do think there's something to say about having games on ABC on a Saturday afternoon, or towards the end of the season, they have games actually on Thursday night on Fox, mm-hmm. which I think is interesting, because you figure Thursday will be your XFL night, and then Friday will be your SmackDown night on Fox. So I think that is important for the league. And listen, it the TV deals are great, but it comes down to who's in the league and what's the quality of football. And I think we saw with the AAF, the quality of football was not great, and who in the league was not enough to bring in the casual viewer. If the XFL's goal is to become a feeder league for the NFL, I think that is their best case scenario. And if they presented themselves as that, I think people would understand that, as opposed to trying to mm-hmm. compete with the NFL. So I think deep down, I would hope Vince McMahon knows by now that they're not going to compete with the NFL. So
yes,
instead of trying to compete
with
the NFL,
Vince McMahon has shown himself to be so flexible over the years, Marcus.
I know.
What I learned at USC Annenberg about, you know, trying to creep in on the market is there's got to be some kind of the top league or whatever has to be doing something wrong or something that you think you could do better to improve on something that they're faulty with. The NFL's problem isn't super long games. That's the WWE's problem, is super long television. That's take Blockbuster and Netflix. You know, Blockbuster was doing big numbers before Netflix existed, but Netflix, they had this idea that, hey, if we deliver movies to people, don't show them late fees and this and that, we can actually, you know, steal the market share from Blockbuster. Like, I don't understand what the XFL, like Marcus said, the best case scenario for them is to be kind of like an ROH or a feeder league for the NFL. Because if they're thinking that they're going to be on par with the NFL, that's just not realistic with the NFL, the way the NFL is structured. It's going to be much easier for an AEW to creep in on WWE's product than, you know, anything else.
Yeah, and I think the original XFL, to give it some credit, like, it did force the NFL to make some changes in terms of production.
Yes.
Right.
But
those are good changes.
Yeah. But I don't know if in 2020 you'll have the XFL doing something so far outside the box that it would make the NFL say, from a broadcasting standpoint, we need to do this. I don't know if there's that much left to do within the body of a football game that isn't already being done.
Broadcast, no, but there was, I think, the point after stuff's pretty interesting.
Like, the NFL's problems it wasn't like the NFL had problems that they stole from the XFL. It was just like, oh, these crane shots are cool, why don't we add this? It wasn't like if they didn't add this stuff that the NFL would like free fall, you know? It's like,
I'm going to tell you something though, Marcus. From a broadcasting standpoint, it's actually not a bad deal for ESPN, and because according to reports, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but they're doing is picking up production costs.
Yes.
And they get to keep all the advertising money.
Yes.
And so to me, and I hate to say it for the wrestling fans listening, but facts are facts. Even as high profile as the SmackDown on Fox will be when they do the launch in October, you're still going to get better advertisers for an XFL than you will for wrestling.
Totally.
Just because wrestling still has a stigma. So even if the XFL quality of play isn't great, I bet you for that first season, they can get some Budweiser or get, you know, Coke or, you know, a quality sponsor for Fox or for ESPN to put some money in their pocket. So that's why I think this isn't going to be an aft situation where they fold midseason. They're going to get at least 1 year, maybe two, just because of the deal that's in place. But it's ultimately going to come down to, is this a product people want to watch?
Yeah. And listen, if you can easily gamble on the stuff, people might be more invested to watch.
Yeah, and I'm rooting for them to succeed just because I hope it takes Vince McMahon away from WWE television more, you know.
Now that's a good segue there, Chris. I see you learning. You're learning these tricks. Vince McMahon was all over. Vince McMahon was like Puff Daddy at the Source Awards in 95?
95,
you know what I'm saying? Vince McMahon was all in the video, on the track. and he was all over that first 30 minutes of Raw on Monday night as a response to the ratings drop. And so I don't want to spend too much time on this because I've got 2 hours this week to talk about this with Waiting on a Review of SmackDown. But just real quick, guys, in terms of the ratings and in terms of Vince McMahon and kind of the wild card stuff, the superstar shakeup, do you see any of this having an immediate effect on the ratings, particularly as we get deeper to the NBA playoffs and that competition gets stiffer in terms of other competing shows?
Chris, you can go first.
I think that, I think the ratings are going to get worse before they get better unless they, there's got to be a culture change in WWE because they have turned themselves into a company that, that you just don't trust anymore. I was listening to, the Wrestling Observer the other day with Mike Sempervivi and Brian Alvarez, and some fan did a list of like WWE advertising things and the amount of times that they actually followed through. So there was like 297 episodes of Raw that they looked at. Where they advertise something, only 95 times in that year did they follow through on what they advertise. You know, that's a problem.
Card subject to change, baby. It's on your ticket.
Yeah, that's not what card subject to change means. Card subject to change means is if the fighters or somebody falls ill or some emergency happens, that you can, you know, a suitable substitute would be put in place. Not you can just blatantly fucking lie and say, hey, we're going to do this and then not, and then do something else. And then also, I think that Saudi Arabian deal hurt them as well. You know, I mean, this is, we live in a time now where people are sensitive to these issues. There are a lot of people who said they were going to boycott WWE after that Saudi Arabia stuff happened. And a lot of people followed through. So it's like they've got to figure something out as far as like, you know, their public relations stance, what's important to them. How are they going to get viewers back? Because it's easy to ride high when you're the only game in town, but you know, eventually all this stuff, the chickens will come home to roost. I'm not saying it's going to happen anytime soon, but you know, the TV the last couple of weeks is just abhorrently bad, man. It was so abysmal, so abominable. And I just don't know like how you can sustain doing this continuously.
What about you, Marcus?
I think the problem, it's a couple of things. One, obviously, storylines are a bit of a mess. The direction of the show is a mess.
Yeah.
There's not a single talent that is out there that they can just bring in to sort of, you know, pop a rating. Outside of a CM Punk, which, you know, not going to happen.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, Punk, maybe Rock.
But I mean, Rock comes back for what, a night, and then what?
Like, he's not maybe Cena, full-time. But like,
Cena's not popping rating.
Stick around.
No.
Triple H said on one of those investor calls a few years ago, he said that the new model of WWE is to make sure that the company stays bigger than individual talent. Not, you know, the superstars, they don't want superstars to become so big to where if they leave, they'll be left high and dry. The problem with that is that's the only way eyes are going to come to the product. You need somebody whose brand becomes equal to or bigger than the brand of WWE. That's how every sports entity works. You know what I'm saying? LeBron James is his brand is as big as the NBA's. That's how this symbiosis works. You can't have talent every talent on the roster be a dweeb, because that's not going to bring eyes to the product. You need that Rock. You need that Austin. You need even a Bret Hart. You need somebody that, you know, when people think of that company, they think of that company. Mm. This is just branding 101. It's not even rocket science. You can't have, you know, the company, everybody, because that's a part of evolution too. Eventually, people become bigger than their surroundings, and they have to move on. There's nothing wrong with that. The Rock couldn't be in WWE in 2019 because he became who he is, and now we're seeing it with Cena, and we saw it with, you know, Austin. That's just the circle of life.
So what you're saying is the company needs a David Ruffin. We can't have a company full of Otises because ain't nobody coming to see you, Otis.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much, yeah.
So right now the WWE is just full of Otis Williams, and we're looking for an Eddie Kendricks or a David Ruffin, at least a Dennis lead. Edwards.
Yes.
Yeah.
Somebody got to sing lead.
Somebody has to sing lead.
Which kind of ties into the other WWE story for the week, Marcus. We can touch on that too right now, which is the Leo Rush deal. And how that kind of speaks to maybe the culture behind the scenes at the company. I don't know how much you've heard about the story, but you know, apparently it was reported Leo Rush had heat in the locker room. Leo Rush came out, spoke to Fightful last week and gave his side of the story. And whether it's Leo Rush or whether it's, you know, the Revival and their contract situation, it feels like there's maybe a shift going on right now between the way things were handled in the past and how things are handled now in 2019.
I have some thoughts, not so much about Leo Rush, but just the contract stuff in general.
Okay.
Nate, if you had a contract at Zaxby's and you were, you signed this contract to work 2 years, and 6 months in, you decide, hey, I'm not happy with this job, I'm not happy with this contract, I'm going to go on social media and put Zaxby's on blast for my bad contract. How do you think that would play over at work, Nate?
Oh, it ain't going to go over too well, Marcus.
No, it's not. And I think we're seeing this with wrestlers who, I think there are ways to professionally air your grievances to your management behind the scenes and in private. And I think we've seen maybe some of that with certain talent being released, like a Goldust. And then there's ways to embarrass your company. And if you embarrass your company, the company's not going to be motivated to sort of help you out. And I think we've seen that now with Sasha Banks, with Luke Harper, with Leo Rush. I just feel like you're running the risk of heat, not heat, I don't want to use that term. You're running the risk of backlash internally if you decide to embarrass your company. So I understand where Leo's coming from, but at the same time, situation like that, maybe you don't need to air your dirty laundry because you're still under contract with this company.
Do you think something to work? And this is something that Chris and I were talking about offline, but do you think something in the company has changed, or do you think it's the mindset of the modern athlete, the modern wrestler that has changed, or both?
I know. I think they see a shiny new toy in AEW, and there's probably a legitimate second option where there was not a second option prior to now. And I think wrestlers are getting antsy and they want to see what this other option is all about. But at the same time, they have this contract that all of a sudden they don't want to honor. And if I'm WWE, I'm going to say, no, you're going to honor your contract. That's the whole point of a contract.
This is what they need to do. Those contracts are bogus. If you're in the legal field, and I'm surprised, like, when I see these lawyers, they always jump on WWE for, like, wellness policy violations and stuff. That's always going to be a problem because they never complain about those contracts when they're in the middle of it. They always wait until they're broken down, bombed out, and depleted to start complaining about the stuff that was happening to them in WWE. They're not true independent contractors. We know this. because it's not even the legalese of it makes no sense. So you either lawyer up and challenge it that way from a legal standpoint. It's going to cost you a good chunk of money. Say, hey, this contract, when I signed it, I was bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, and wasn't thinking about the long game. I was thinking about the short game, but this is a faulty contract. Here's the thing. Uber drivers, Lyft drivers, don't put up with the shit that wrestlers put up with. They just don't. There was a class action lawsuit recently about the Uber independent contractor status, and they had to pay out like millions of dollars to Lyft drivers or Uber drivers or whatever. I don't understand why wrestlers, one, why you sign these contracts in the first place. Two, you when you're in the middle of this contract, you don't legitimately try. I do agree with Marcus in the sense that why publicly state your grievances? This is what the legal system is for. You get on you hire a lawyer, you tell them what you're trying to do, and anytime there's ambiguity to the law, it's up to the courts to establish a precedent. And there hasn't been a precedent established with this independent contractor status. That's just a fact.
Do you think it's a matter of people not wanting to rock the boat until now, like Marcus is saying, because now there is a legitimate, viable alternative to some extent with AEW, whereas 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago, there wasn't any place else to go.
Okay, and they've got archaic practices in WWE that still haven't really died down. So I want to read a couple of these quotes from some of the wrestlers on Leo Rush, if you don't mind. One of them, this is Jericho responding to a fan on Twitter. He says, "The key statement there is, if I was a big star, you're not, so you don't know the respect and dedication you need to make it to the WWE. I never once made, in quotation marks, a young guy carry my bags, but I've shown respect every day. To disrespect the vets in any way is taboo in our biz." So that's Chris Jericho talking about Leo Rush. Booker T, "I've never got heat. Throughout my whole wrestling career, the whole 20-plus years as a performer, I never got heat. I never kissed up to anyone, but I never got heat. I worked with the best of them. I worked with Austin, blah, blah, blah." And he goes on to say, you know, sometimes you got to do what you got to do. You got to play the game. And then Mark Henry, "It's not a race issue. It's an ego issue. Who are you? Nobody is exempt from being respectful to the business. And guys, we all have done it. Austin did it. Rock did it," in reference to carrying bags and stuff. Here's my thing with all these veteran statements. Not one time do they say Leo Rush did anything that was breaking the rules or like out of pocket. All this shit is about is carrying bags and crap like that. Like, really?
To be fair, this is not a wrestling thing. This is a sports thing. This is...
I mean, well, okay, but also to be fair, I've been on sports teams. When you have a guy that doesn't want to do the hazing and stuff like that, well, at least in my history, you don't fuck with that guy. That's as simple as that. No one's saying you got to be friends with this guy, but if the guy isn't into your little rituals, you leave him alone. You know what I'm saying? Like with Kobe Bryant wasn't into all that rookie hazing crap, and he wasn't the player that he ultimately became his rookie year. And nobody was like, you know, they left him to his devices. They were like, okay, you don't want to be a part of our brotherhood, don't be a part of the brotherhood. But what is that? Like, should you be getting fired?
But here's the thing. Leo Rush is not Kobe Bryant.
Leo, but Kobe Bryant wasn't Kobe Bryant that first year of him being in the NBA. He was airballing.
18-year-old Kobe Bryant was not Leo Rush. I think. Listen,
to me, that's a moot point. That's an important point, though.
What leverage does Leo Rush have as a talent to? Leo Rush is not a star. I'm sorry.
That's what it comes down to is no argument of substance. It's like, okay, we do not think this guy is a star, so carry our bags, motherfucker.
Is anybody in this company a star though? Outside of the bubble of wrestling, who's
in this? Like they just offer the revival $550,000 a year contracts. And Leo Rush is complaining. Does Leo Rush not have any validity to say,
Leo had an offer. I would consider Leo that contract very generous. I'm sorry. Considering where he's at currently, getting a five-year deal.
But does he not have the right to think that it's – see, this is the problem that I have with wrestlers is they don't have any autonomy. They don't have any agency. When they get these contracts and they just accept them, I respect Leo Rush for at least saying, hey, you know, I think this is a bogus offer. I don't want to participate in your little wrestler's courts bull crap. I'm not grabbing waters for anybody, even though – you know, if I were him, I'd pick the hills I would die on better. But, you know, I don't think that stuff is a fireable offense. If he was like, you know, doing like some Me Too crap backstage, or if he was just, you know, like snitching on guys for, you know, not for stuff that has nothing to do with him.
If he was D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah, I'd be like, okay, yeah, this guy's problematic. But if he doesn't want to involve himself in that hierarchical system, I don't see like the problem with it. And like I said, the complaints that these guys are levying against this guy have nothing to do with him showing up late for work, or being disrespectful, or as far as like not following company protocol. He doesn't want to follow the backstage protocol. And if that's going to be a thing, then WWE should put that in the rules. So they should say, hey, this is when you sign with WWE, you do this rookie bullshit.
Here's the thing. No one told him to sign with WWE. He had to know people over there to know what it was like before he signed with the company. So part of this is on him for even signing with the company in the first place. And again, it goes back to embarrassing your company. No, I mean, listen, I'm not saying the man should be silent, but I do think that if you go public with some of the stuff, like if you go public with some of the stuff, if you have a real job.
He didn't go public with it in his defense. The story leaked out by Fightful. And his name was getting bashed all over Twitter, and he responded in kind to it. It wasn't a situation with like Harper where he goes and tweets out, I asked for a release, or not even a situation with Sasha Banks. This guy's name was dragged through the mud for a good week or so before he finally responded to that Fightful article and was like, look, this is what I feel, and this is what, you know, how I feel like I've been treated.
And my thing on it is, I think you can have two things happening simultaneously, Marcus. Two things can both be true in this situation. Could Leo Rush have handled this situation both from a backstage component and from a social media component? Could he handle those situations better? I think so. But I also think if he feels he has valid concerns with the company and they are not listening to those concerns, and he's not the only one that is not listening to these concerns. You know, he's not the only one who has had grievances over the past few months. I think the company might need to look inward and say, is there something we're not doing that is you know, to the best service of our talent. Because, you know, you don't want to rearrange the system for one guy, but if you got 10, 15, 20 people that have brought things up over the past 6-7 months, you might say, okay, what are we doing that is not in the best interest of our people? Why is the morale not where it needs to be? And, you know, what steps can we take within reason to say, okay, you have a feeling about this, you have a feeling about this. Well, this is what we're going to do to address that. But on the back end, this is what you have to do, whether it's, you know, the locker room stuff or the appearances out in the public. This is what you have to do. So I think there seems to be, just from an outsider's perspective and from talking to people that have worked there, it seems to be a lack of communication from the top end to your talent. And that's not going to be good in any situation.
Yeah, I think it's two separate issues, but I do think, listen, I would never work for a company. I've heard too many stories about WWE that I would never work there. And a lot of this stuff isn't new. So when a guy signs with the company, they have to know going in that there's a chance that this might go sideways.
Well, here's in the defense of the talent, so to speak, you can take advantage of somebody's youth, full naivete with these contracts, especially when you're coming from.
I wouldn't even go that far. I don't even think you can go. You need to go as far as youthful naivete. I think you need to go as far as they're the company that gives you the biggest exposure.
Yeah,
with the biggest money up front.
You get the biggest exposure, but there's limitations. There's
for a lot of guys. Yeah, there's nowhere else for guys and girls to go.
And a lot of these people aren't learned enough to, you know, like to understand. They're not looking at the long game. They're looking at the short game.
Yeah.
Which is problematic in and of itself. But I really do believe that WWE is just not the company that it was even, you know, 10 years ago or maybe even 5 years ago. AEW isn't even a proven commodity yet. And people want to go there. You know what I'm saying? This is just ridiculous. It's like AEW has done nothing, and people are wanting to leave the comfort of the WWE contracts to go to this place.
Hey, come to Death Row Records. Come to Death Row Records. Yeah. You're tired of your manager being all in the video. Come to Death Row Records.
Like, how many NFL players have you heard with AAF or XFL coming through being like, yeah, I want to get let out of my contract to go to these places? This is a WWE problem. It's like everybody should want to be in WWE. Everybody should want to have lengthy WWE careers because it is the NFL of this industry. So That should be an automatic, and it's not anymore. And that's another issue in and of itself.
So we gonna put a pin in this right here, Marcus, because Chris gave me another perfect segue, because he's talking about people planning for the short game. But you and I have spoken many times on this program about one man who is playing for the short game, the long game, and the end game. And that's your boy Crumbs, a.k.a. Byron Allen, a.k.a. The Mogul.
The Mogul. Mr. Coming Up Next.
Coming Up Next!
Or it's Mr. Coming Up now.
Coming Up Next!
Byron Allen, back in the news, because he was involved in the Sinclair deal. Of the regional sports networks that were acquired by Sinclair last week, $9.6 billion that they purchased from Disney. They will have 21 channels in total. So think of your, you know, Fox Sports blank in your local markets. And part of that investment group was Byron Allen. And this is from Bloomberg. He said, quote, "It's a huge opportunity. The networks were put on Allen said in an interview, "The networks were put on the block by Disney after it agreed to buy a bigger piece of their former owner, Rupert Murdoch's 21st Century Fox Inc. Quote, I'm a huge fan of Rupert Murdoch, Alan said, and this is some of his best work. let's see. It does not say how much he spent as part of this deal or how much control he has of these networks, but our boy Byron Allen is now getting into the sports game. And my only pause in this is it's Sinclair. And Sinclair is a right-wing television, they're more than a network now, conglomerate. And I don't know how I feel about Crumbs partnering up with Sinclair on a business deal.
Maybe he's going to change the system from the inside, Mark.
Because he is politically liberal. I know that about Byron Allen. I've met him a couple times here at in L.A. At these Democratic functions. And, yeah, he's politically liberal, so I don't – you know, this is – I was surprised.
Business is business, but
– yeah. Yeah, it is true. That's true, man.
Oh, man, why didn't Byron Allen just throw his hat in the ring?
No.
To be a political candidate, Marcus?
We have enough.
Byron, can you imagine Byron on the debate stage with Trump? Coming up next, lower taxes. Coming up next, universal health care. Coming up next, we're retracting our forces from Iran. You can't beat that platform.
That could be his catch. You know, have like those Obama Warhol looking shirts with that phrase on it.
Coming up next.
Yeah, that would work.
It's going to be interesting, Marcus, because I think, again, we don't know how much power he has within, you know, the system. Mm-hmm. But we've talked on the show before, like the moves he's made have been, for the most part, low risk, high reward moves. Mm-hmm. Like Byron hasn't really put himself out there to take a hit when he hadn't had to. So I think this is a situation where he had to know. Like, you know, you just talked about the WWE wrestlers before they signed a contract. You have to know what you're getting into. I think he has to know what the politics of Sinclair are. And I don't think he will allow himself to be a party to that. The question is how far can he distance himself when he's now in bed with them in a business standpoint?
Speaking of, there's another story from yesterday. Byron Allen back in the news. Byron Allen's Entertainment Studios has struck a deal to buy four small market TV stations from Bayou City Broadcasting for $165 million. Man. Huh. Entertainment Studios announced the Bayou City deal on the heels of Friday's news that Allen has joined with Sinclair Broadcast Group and the $10.6 billion acquisition of 21 regional sports networks that Disney was required to sell in order to acquire other 21st Century Fox assets.
Yeah, I'm seeing it on Variety, yeah.
So his networks will be in Evansville, Indiana, the CBS affiliate and Fox affiliate, and then Lafayette, Louisiana. Mm. He has an NBC affiliate and a Fox affiliate. So he's just spending all kinds of money.
This is random ass. Like, man. Byron, I bet you Byron Allen was a dude when you played Monopoly.
A
lot of people wait strategically for what they're going to buy. Byron's mm-hmm. just like, yeah, I'll take Marvin Gardens. I'll take Baltic
Hotel,
Avenue.
Hotel, like, please.
Yeah, shit that don't even add up. Byron is like, yeah, he's got all these bits and pieces of Monopolies on his side of the board.
Yes. So he's, listen, we joked about Crumbs. But for the sort of portfolio he's building, he's pretty he's not talked about enough from the black community in terms of what he's doing.
And we got to talk about who he beat out for those stations, too. It was an investment group that Magic Johnson and Ice Cube was a part of. And, you know, Ice Cube had been talking about before the Disney purchase, Ice Cube had been talking about getting those networks, those regional Fox networks, for a while. And I'm kind of disappointed that he didn't get them, but, you know, it's still a good thing that you know, well, it could be a good thing. I don't want to say it's a good thing.
No, Byron. Sinclair wasn't getting into bed with Ice Cube.
No.
Yeah. Well, Sinclair had that same issue too when they tried to buy WGN, and then WGN reneged because of that commercial that they put out with the news stations and all the local anchors saying the exact same right wing pre-message or whatever. I don't know if you guys ever saw that. Yeah.
But no, I couldn't see them working with Ice Cube for a sports network.
No, not so much.
Break yourself, fool. We got Pac-10 basketball coming up next.
Yeah.
Hey, man, Bit 3 is almost here.
Yo.
Season 3.
That's the reason why they didn't deal with Ice Cube, because he would have made him play all the Big 3 games.
Bit 3 is not on Fox anymore, by the way. Kiss your
like nobody wants to watch 40-year-old Jason Williams play.
Yeah, I watch it every now and then, but it's not great.
No.
It could be better, but I think the 3-on-3, I would almost rather see 5-on-5 just to have it feel like an actual basketball game as opposed to this half-court stuff.
And then just go ahead and bring back slam ball.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that, Marcus?
Yep.
Yeah.
Trampoline, just bring back slam ball so these dudes can jam again.
So they can die trying to jump on the trampoline? Come on.
50 injuries in the first week of the season. Like, damn.
Yeah. Slam ball exists, too. It does.
Slam ball still exists?
Mm-hmm, just not on television anymore.
Like roller derby, just a random link.
I don't know if Pat Croce owns it still, but it's still around.
And we need Marcus next time. We do need to listen to that podcast with Byron Allen that Black Man USA keeps trying to get us listen to. So next time we talk about Byron Allen, we'll have a listen to that so we can add some more perspective. Because I'm actually interested, Marcus. Because you know now I'm becoming more financially literate, and I want to hear what Byron Allen has to talk about, because I'm sure he's got some. He's got some interesting stories and some good advice, probably. Because you're right. Like, people don't think about him, but if you look at who owns media and who owns entertainment, in terms of once you get past, you know, kind of the big three or four companies, he's probably up there in terms of somebody that owns a lot of real estate in the entertainment world that we never talk about.
Yeah. Right. Maybe he wants it that way. Maybe he wants to fly under the radar and pop up to random NABJ meetings unannounced, and
That's probably the first thing he says on the podcast. Like, Byron, how'd you do it? You got to stay under these white people's noses.
Yes.
Yeah.
Don't let them see what you're doing, because then they gonna ruin it.
And he still has like the syndicated shows that he does too, and then the like he has these game shows that come on like at these odd hours of the night.
Hold on, wait. This is new information. You telling me Byron Allen's got a game show?
Yeah, well, he's not. So he's got this one game show. I can't think of the name of it, but it's like Hollywood Squares esque.
I was gonna say, was it Hollywood Cubes?
Oh no,
celebrities on there. And he'll
celebrities. Let's put that in quote, please. Celebrities.
Yeah. No, he's got like
in a center square, Jimmy J.J. Walker.
No, he'll have like not A-listers, but he'll have like Wanda Sykes on there, and then he had what's the woman's name that used to host The View that was on Wrestling with MVP?
Sherry Shepherd.
Yeah, she's
he's got like black celebrities.
I'm not going to talk about Sherry Shepherd. I've learned my lesson.
Oh, okay.
He's got black celebrities on there.
And then one of those, like, yeah, so he's good.
This week, like, Wanda Sykes, Sherry Shepherd, and the kid from Everybody Hates Chris.
Right, yeah.
Are you talking about Funny You Should Ask?
Funny You Should Ask, that's what it's called.
Oh, wow. Is Byron the host?
He's not the host. There's some other toolbox dude that's the host of it.
So here's like a list of people who appeared on season one. Howie Mandel, Anthony Anderson, Tiffany Haddish.
Okay.
Yeah,
John Lovitz.
They are C-listers.
John Lovitz is C. Cheryl Hines.
John Lovitz is F.
Louis Anderson, Cedric Entertainer, Billy Gardell, Tommy Davison, Sherry Shepherd, Tim Meadows, Tom Arnold, Cheryl Underwood.
Tim Meadows from Saturday Night Live, Tim Meadows.
Yeah, Bill Bellamy, Jimmy Walker. I hope it's at Jimmy Walker.
Wow, I didn't even know. I was just joking about JJ.
Jack A. Jack A's on here.
Jack A.
Gary Owen, of course. He's problematic now.
Oh, Gary Owen.
David Allen Greer, George Wallace, Loni Love, Pauly Shore, Vivica A. Fox.
I feel like Gary Owen is kind of taking the place, Marcus Vandenberg. Like, you remember 10 years ago when Michael Rapaport was kind of on the fence?
Yeah, now he's off the
fence. Before he went all the way over to the dark side?
Yeah.
That's where I feel like Gary Owen is. Like, Gary Owen, he's not Rapaport bad yet, but it's like sometimes he'll say something. I'm like, oh, Gary.
Mm-hmm. Here's the key number from this press release. This is from 2018. Funny you should ask. They're going to produce 520 episodes through four seasons.
You said 500 episodes in season one?
No. This got renewed. So through the four seasons that they're shooting to do, they will have, by the time they're done through four seasons, they will have 520 episodes.
Damn. And he probably shot all 520 in about 2 weeks.
Yeah. Half hour show. 520 episodes.
That's how Byron Allen gets that money.
It's Kobe Bryant.
Yeah,
he's Kobe Bryant.
like I was reading some article on him in Variety a couple years ago, and like he has a system. What he does is he produces these shows for super, super cheap and gets these advertisers that need exposure to their products to advertise for him, and they pay top dollar to this guy for advertising on his stuff at these odd hours of the night or whatever. So, I mean,
that is how Crumbs do. Because even if you look at entertainers, all he did at entertainers was he took his camera crew to a press junket and got like some side room.
Yeah. And made it TV, made it content.
Yeah, made it content.
It's like not one of those episodes that Entertainers or entertainmentstudios.com or any of that crap. There wasn't one compelling interview on
of course not.
Or like, oh, remember that interview someone did? It's like Byron Allen is like a far, far cry from Larry King.
And the thing about Byron is like he gets people to have movies out, but it's never like a good movie. Like it's like this week. It won't be anybody from Avengers Endgame, but it'll be like your boy from that Intruder movie. Dennis Quaid. Like, he'd be like, from the hottest movie in the country, Intruder, Dennis Quaid. Like, that movie made $1,000 this weekend.
Yeah.
So shout out to Crumbs, man. Crumbs is an American hero, Marcus Vandenberg. Man. I'm not here for any more jokes about Byron Allen because this.
Oh
man,
yes, I am. Speak for yourself.
This man been putting in work, Marcus. He Byron Allen crawls so that we might run.
he might be coming at you with a hefty contract here soon, Marcus.
I already told Marcus if Crumbs gives us a call, we're selling out. Like,
oh yeah.
We're gonna be like Leo Rush. We're not even gonna look at the contract. We're just gonna sign it.
Yeah, just sign it. They complain later.
Yeah, then 6 months later, Marcus complaining on the internet because Crumbs wouldn't let his wife in the studio.
Yeah.
So that's gonna do it for this week's show. I like how Byron Allen just brings joy to the world. Which is again, Byron Allen 2020. Who would be his running mate?
Probably John Lovitz or someone like one of his white comedians.
I'm thinking Byron Allen probably wants he's smart enough to know that he needs a woman on the ticket this time around.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm gonna say Byron Allen and Rosie O'Donnell.
Or Cheryl Underwood. She's a Republican. Yeah, like they could probably get some of the Dems, some of the Republicans,
and then she would get the Loni Love vote because they all look alike, right?
Yeah. Now Cheryl Underwood's the one that looks like Wesley Snipes and Tu Wong Fu.
Oh, all right.
Oh my.
Wrap the show up before we get in trouble.
That's mean, but I look, go look up Cheryl Underwood and look up Wesley Snipes, Noxzema Jackson, and then tell me I'm wrong next week. That's your homework, audience. So, before we get too much trouble, that's going to do it for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Chris knows I'm right.
I don't know anything, man.
Professor, where can the people find you on social media? What you got coming up? And let them know about NWA, which will happen at some point in the future. We have no idea because of schedules, but it's going to happen eventually.
Yeah, so look me up on Twitter, KMEZ does it. I'll probably add my name to Twitter soon, so that'll help. Christopher Ely, KristofferEaly. Google me, you'll probably find some punk ass students giving me low scores on rate my professor.
Wow.
I don't know. Or they might be giving me high scores. I never checked that shit. But anyway, that's about it.
What about you, Brother Marcus?
You can find me on social media at Marco Will, MarcoWill.
You can find me on social media at N8, MozaiK, at Nate Mosaic. Follow the show, Cospod, KOS_POD. Check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/Kings of Sport. Patreon, patreon.com/Kings of Sport. I sense a theme recurring here. iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, Google Play. There's probably more. Tune in
YouTube,
radio,
you
perhaps.
Can listen to the show.
Yeah, YouTube. You can check out the show on YouTube now. When they don't flag us for music.
Well, yeah, which is every show.
We've gotten flagged for every show. There's only been one show that's been taken down because of the music, and I can't even remember. I think it was like a random song too. Like I get flagged all the time just because I put real music in the show. But the one that got taken down, I think it was like I put in a country song.
Oh.
Like, it wasn't even Prince. Like, I put Prince in, and they let Prince slide because Prince ain't around them.
Yeah, so the trick to that is you got to use old WCW stock music because none of that stuff is copyrighted.
Man, Jericho's, can we get Norman Smiley's, like Jim Rome, is he using Norman Smiley's music?
Can we get Shane Helms' Vertebrinker theme song? The fake semi-star? Yeah.
Oh, well, we could get our man Prince Ikea.
Prince Ikea, still, one of the greatest things in WCW history, the Purple Rain knockoff.
Yeah.
That's going to do it for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Thanks for listening. Thanks for checking out the show. We'll be back next week with the new edition talking about the NBA playoffs. I'm sure we'll have more ratchetness and foolishness to discuss. Be back here next week for an all-new edition of the world's most dangerous sports show, the Kings of Sport podcast. So, for Marcus Vandenberg, for the Professor KME over here looking like Jonathan Capehart stunt double. that's an MSNBC deep cut for those of you out there that watch MSNBC. And for Byron Crumbs Allen, the mogul. If you're listening, have your people call our people. actually, call Marcus. I'll let you deal with Byron Allen since you're the more professional of us two.
Okay.
I might say something that mess up the deal. He'll be like, Cheryl Underwood happens to be my child's godmother. Like, damn. Messed up the whole deal, Marcus. For Marcus, for Chris, for Byron Allen, I am the Godfather Nate Milton. Thank you for listening. And coming up next, it's the end credits, because it's the end of the show. And you've been down with the Kings.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, fat sacks. Brand new Cadillac, being nice to
Let me tell you something, Mean Gene. I'm gonna go out there and I'm gonna leave it all on the mat, because that's what I do when I get it done, so I can do it. Yeah!